So here is Sunday, the 2nd, Beis Mar Cheshvan, Aleph Lech Lecha, Shir number 10, 2nd Shir Sukkis, Derech Hashem, Chelek Aleph, Paragraph Hey. So we're already in the basics. Ramchal starts from the very beginning of the world, which is Hashem, and Hashem's creating the world. And the purpose of Hashem creating the world, to bestow goodness, and only the full goodness will do. Anything less wouldn't be a derech Hashem, wouldn't be the way of Hashem to do anything less than perfect goodness. The perfect goodness is for us to earn. Goodness means, the Mesil Sesharim phrases it, the Hisanag al Hashem. We don't understand, we don't really feel our neshamas, we don't understand spirituality, we're very, very physical beings. If you can, some sort of lifted and connection, some do have like a glimpse of if something happens that's hashgacha pratis mamish, or during ne'ilah, or maybe even during a daily kriyashma, or maybe during a kumzit, or even you hear a song and you just feel connected to the Ribono Shel Olam. Or you see Hashgacha Pratis, or you married off all your children finally, and you feel a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you feel he's there, you feel his reality. You might do Shaar HaBechina, which is to study nature, study the physical sciences. That's what the Rambam says to do, that's what the Chavis HaLavah says to do, and you see Hashem all around you, and you feel connected with the awareness. Okay, so Hashem made but you have to earn it, which means Hashem made this unique being, nothing else. The whole Bria, all the cosmos, all the planets, all the stars, billions and billions of stars, everything in the entire universe, all the universes, everything. He made this reward of bonding with Hashem, and that only earning it will be the Tov Hashalem. He goes even deeper than that. Besides the idea, we can all understand that when you earn something, it's better. You feel it more. You feel it's deserved. It's not Mahamad Kisufa, as it's called. It's not embarrassing. It's not a freebie. But he goes even deeper and says, more like Hashem, because the bonding is the most. And he'll say soon, we'll get to it, that the Torah, he didn't get up to anything about Torah, he didn't talk about the Jewish people yet, he's talking about mankind. And you bond, and through being spiritual, and your neshama, he'll go on to explain. He's going to explain everything, that there's a guf that gets in the way, and a neshama, that's what's going to bond, but the guf will also become, well, in the Ramchal's view of history, of mankind, but we're going to bond with Hashem as spiritual beings, and we will become spiritual beings, and we'll earn it. But there's a tug of war between the guf, which is left its own devices. The guf isn't bad, it's bad, well it is bad, but it's bad in the sense of that if you don't control the guf, it's going to be like an animal. We know that, and it's very not spiritual, it's physical. So although the Ramchal holds that ultimately the neshama has the power to transform the guf into something spiritual too by doing mitzvahs, but we'll get to it. But upon him, the battleground through which mankind earns bonding with Hashem is through winning the tug of war between what he calls the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov. Who am I? Is a good question. We didn't go into it. Is my Yetzer Tov, my neshama, my Yetzer Hara, which is the guf, the guf's desires and wants. And I have to pick and choose. I have to win the battle, the tug of war. But if those two are in a tug of war, who am I? It's a question. Who am I? And this has to do probably with words like ruach nefesh, neshama, yechida. There's many aspects to a person. One thing's for sure, I am not the physical me that I see in the mirror when I look. Some people might add, Baruch Hashem, I'm one of them. But I'm not my neshama either, because the way that Ramchal is using it now, my neshama is that spiritual chelek aloka mimal, and I have to create an entity in which the neshama overpowers the guf and drags the guf and purifies the guf and spiritualizes the guf. So who am I? What's me? It's not the neshama. The neshama is the one battling with the guf. So it's probably ruach. It's other words, but realize that this is something. You know, there's a me besides my yetzer tov and my yetzer hara. There's a me. There's something called me. It's not my guf and it's not my neshama. So what is it? A kabbalim is a tug of war, and he says Hashem does everything ideal. Everything in this world is created to create the perfect working conditions. I told you it's like an office where you, the boss buys you the state-of-the-art chair, desk, computer, printer, scanner. Everything is optimum. But Hashem created the best world in which to work. The best possible world in which to work. It doesn't always, it's not static. You gotta go with the times. If he would buy you today a typewriter, the Beth Smith Corona typewriter, you would look at him and say, you know, please ship this off to the Smithsonian. You have no use for the Smith Corona, I think it's called, yeah. So, but that's a state of the art work. And then he sends you on vacation. Hashem doesn't send us on vacation, but it's an idea that Olam Haba, again, there's two Olam Habas according to the Ramchal. Is while the guf is losing its physicality by decomposing in the earth, the neshama is basking b'ziv Hashem in Gan Eden, but that's not the end of time. That's a waiting station, and the end of time is Tchias HaMesiv, where the guf and the neshama reunite, and the neshama energizes the guf with spirituality, and that's what's la'olam v'ed la'netzach la'ad u'la'netzach mitzachim. Okay, so there's this battle, and it says it's the optimum conditions for this matzah, except Hashem in His great kindness made the battle time very limited. We talk about 120 years, you know, 150 years of wish on everybody, and the time of reward is l'netzach. That's the way Hashem set it up, and so it's an even battle, though it's even. But you see, everything when you learn Derech Hashem, He really explains things, and this is what He explained in the Hakdamah, which had nothing to do with the Sefer. It was, if you remember, the Hakdamah was how to approach a forest of knowledge, how to approach it in a way that you'll remember it, that you'll know what's the ikker, what's the tuffel, what's the tree, what's the branches, what's the trunk, what's the cause, what's the effect, what's the principle, what are the protim. That's what he explained, that to understand things you have to be able to analyze them and categorize them. So we should be somewhat sensitive to that. And as we go through Derech Hashem, maybe you remember what we learned the last time, maybe you won't, but it really unfolds. He says something that's more klali, and then in the ensuing paragraphs, he gets into protim, and then prote protim, and then more detail, and more subtleties, and more differences. So why doesn't he just throw everything at you at once? Because that's what he said in his Hakdamah. That way you'll never remember anything. You'll just have one bilbul of knowledge in your head, and you'll memorize 1,000 facts. None of them will necessarily fit into one another. You won't see how one thing flows from the other, so it won't do you any good, except if you're interested in memorizing a bunch of facts. But he wants you to understand the whole picture, so I'm not speaking it out, but you'll see the learning he gives, you know, he gives you a basis, and then the pr- principle and then how everything flows from that. It's really a very, his work, it's a remarkable, and that's why it's split into sections, prokem, and paragraphs. And he's following his methodology that he wrote in the Hakdamah. And he really does that in all the Sfarim, although you don't see it as much. You don't see it, for example, in Masilas Yesharim. Masilas Yesharim is based on the stepping, that's Ramchal also, is based on the stepping stones of the Prakim flowing into one another. You know, this comes first, and then you go to the next step, and then the next step, and then the next step, and he really subtly explains how one flows from the other. Okay, so we're up to Chelek Aleph, Perek Shlishi, paragraph 5. And he says, So there's mankind, olam hazeh, olam haba, guf, neshama, everything's perfect. This is the office, state of the art, the nation land, state of the art. You're not going to bring along a computer to vacation. You're going to bring along your bathing suit and an easy chair. And everything is the best possible optimum way. Vacation is the wrong word. It's the makom of reward. And it's the hisana gal Hashem. Okay, perek hey. I'm sorry, paragraph hey. And now we have to go further. Mankind. What I just described to you as what Hashem made the world in like the optimum way, it's not what we see today. And that's because of Adam HaRishon. Now there's a philosophical debate, which is really not relevant to us. Do we talk about Hashem's plan being thwarted by the chait of Adam HaRishon? I mean, and there's Yudi. Hashem always knew that Adam HaRishon would be chote. So he always knew that the playing field would change and the rules would change. So what you could almost ask, what was the purpose? And he knew that, but you know, Yudi never. That's a mystery according to most, many Rishonim, it's a mystery. According to other Rishonim, they give a teretz, and the teretz is a mystery. We don't really fully understand, and if you think you do, it means you don't really understand the question. We don't to bump up Hashem's idea with Bechira. So Hashem knew that it's not like Hashem's plan was thwarted. The ideal state of the world with Hashem's game plan of this earning this aneg al Hashem was the state of the world before the chait of Adam HaRishon. After the chait of Adam HaRishon, it changed. But Hashem knew that would change, obviously. So there's the ideal state, the way he would have. We use human words the way he would have liked it to be, but you have to say that since he has Yediyah, Hashem knows everything that's going to happen. Of course, it's even a childish way to say it. Hashem is above time. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He sees everything. It's like if you would be watching a play and there would be different scenes being played, like in a 3-ring circus, it would be a 15-ring circus, and each scene would be playing in a different ring, and you're watching it all. So this is always happening. Scene 1 is always happening. Scene 2 is always happening. Scene 3 is always happening. Scene 4, but each scene is a progression in time, but you're above it all. So you're watching past, present, and future, which are just words we make up. If you're looking from Hashem's perspective, there's no such thing as past, present, and future. So, but he's like on top, looking at all the scenes of the play. And one is called past, let's say, to someone who's living in scene 6. So 1 to 5 is past, and 7 to 15 is future. But Hashem's looking at everything, and everything's always happening. And that's the best way I understand of Hashem being above time. Yeah.
So, why didn't he just start, like, He could have just started.
That's what I'm explaining.
After,
yeah.
After Adam and Marisha, he could have just started everything and made it work.
Yeah.
He must have wanted to teach us something.
Yes. So he wanted to teach us that the ideal state of this world is the way it was before the chait, and look what chait caused. That's a tremendous moral lesson. That's what the story in Chumash Bereishis is. It's not stories, it's the Nachash and Chava and Adam, and there's tremendous moral lessons to learn from that. We're not delving into it, but you're absolutely correct, and the concept, the overall overriding conceptual lesson is that chait affects you. It's not like you get a demerit on the chart and that's in front of the class. And to graduate into Olam Haba, you need a certain amount of merits, and it has to be more merits than demerits. A chait makes us more physical, pulls us away from Hashem, and makes our climb to spirituality that much harder. And that's it. And Adam Arishon was as close to Hashem as a human being could possibly get, Yitzir Kapov of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Malachim wanted to say Shira to him. I mean, all these things that you see in Medrashim, Yisofa Olam Vatsofo, and he was Chote, and the world became a much more physical place. And every time we're Chote, we become that much more physical, and it pulls us away from Hashem. Really, the Chavis HaLvavos, paints that picture. When he says that, when he finally concludes after debating the issue, that there's really no such thing as a devar harashus. There's really no such thing as optional. Everything you do in life either brings you a step closer to Hashem, even if it's not technically a mitzvah, or takes you a step further away from Hashem, even if it's not technically an avera. Everything is something. Everything has an effect upon a person. Kapalam, that's the answer to your question, but that's not. But we'll just, let's move on, because that's, I don't want to get bogged down in these philosophical questions. So he says, "Umash yisorech od ladas sheinei haminu anushi einin yonu harishon." The original game plan. Rabbi Victor Miller Zatzal says that of course the original game plan was always to have a world of after the chait, because Hashem created the world knowing that would happen, and obviously that's the game plan. But you see, but the cards are stacked. It's a very big chiddush, what Rabbi Victor Miller says. Very big chiddush. It may be logical, and how could it be otherwise? But it's very, very big chiddush, because it's not mashma like that in the Rishonim. Because you'll see now in the Ramchal that after the chait, the cards are stacked. So, and it's that much harder to become spiritual and to overcome. And you need Misa now. There wasn't supposed to be Misa, because the goof was right away supposed to become more spiritual every time you did the Ratzon Hashem. Now, I don't know what, it's hard to imagine what Adam's Avoda was. Was it just to not eat a lav, just to not eat from the Eitz Hadas Tova Ra? Some say he had six of the seven mitzvahs B'nai Noach. How long was it supposed to last? How long would history have been for? Okay, this is like idle speculation. I call it idle because we're not going to sit here and come up with answers. And that's not the purpose of this class. If you want to take a philosophy class, then there's our forum that deal with this issue. It's very unclear how history would have been if other... Or Rabbi Victor Miller claims someone would have been Chote. If not Adam, Kayin. If not Kayin, someone would have been Chote. Because Hashem's plan was always this way, even though it's a tremendous chiddush, because as we say, the cards are stacked. It's not an even fight.
He just said it wasn't even fight.
Then, before the chait. Yes. Yeah, that's what we're saying now. We're trying to learn paragraph 5, and I'm making a mess of it. Paragraph 5 is that what we see now ain't in Yonah Horishon Kamoshana Roim, Umafchinam also atah, ki ulam shinui godal hayabo. A tremendous cataclysmic event happened. A spiritual mabul happened. That's how you can think of it. And the whole world changed. The world is no longer in its pristine condition with balanced fight, Yitzhatov Yitzhara. V'unyan cheta shal odom harishon, and I'm not going to go into how his chet did it. You have to see odom harishon as the representative, but more than the representative, as the microcosm of all the people that will ever live. And everybody's neshama, nefesh, character was in Adam HaRishon. And v'winyan chetos al Adam HaRishon, sh'neshtana bo ha'odom v'olim imashoya b'tchila. Like you say, the phrase, like, nothing will ever be the same again. And the tshuva, sometimes we find cataclysmic events that tshuva doesn't help. Bnei Yisrael after the Egel did tshuva, but they didn't go back to the Luchos Rishonos. They had to settle for the Luchos Shnios. And the Meraglim, they couldn't do tshuva after the Meraglim. They had to spend 40 years in the Midbar, and a different door went into Eretz Yisrael. And et cetera, et cetera. There's some things that are so, we don't know. Tshuva doesn't seem to help. You can't, the tshuva would have to take us back in time, and that you can't do. Time marches forwards. Right, when time marches forwards. So anyway, again, these are all tremendously good questions, but this is not a philosophy class. That's a funny thing to say when you're learning Derech Hashem. But I'm going to tell you that things are much deeper than he doesn't deal with any of these issues here. He deals with some of them in Das Tvunos. He deals with many of them in his other Sforim, and that already borders on Kabbalah, and, well, everything borders on Kabbalah. That already, touches Kabbalah, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff to learn, and we're barely scratching the surface, you know. So, the specifics of what changed, we're told we'll say him, and all the ramifications, Rabbim, because we're going to see that Misa is not just, it's not a punishment. Misa is now to break down the physicality that gained the upper hand because of his chait. So you need Misa. Misa is like, in the Ramchal, Misa is a gift. It's a gift. Because of the chait of Adam HaRishon, physicality holds sway. And the only way, and again, so before Adam HaRishon's chait, his goof would right away become more spiritual every time he did a mitzvah. Let's forget about what a mitzvah was by him. But now the goof is not affected. The goof stays physical. Sometimes we have like a feeling, we feel closer to Hashem. Maybe it's after a fast, you know. Or again, you see, but you need Misa. Misa is a gift from Hashem, so that the guf can lose its physicality and come together with the neshama to be purified by the neshama at Tchiyas HaMeisim. V'oidah dabe bom lefnim, we're going to be talking about that, v'siyata d'shmaya. V'nimtza shehadibur b'minhu anushiv avchuna b'nesuav, talking about mankind and understanding all of the aspects of mankind, is kvulim. Now you have to go to two classes. Now you have to go have two conversations. Ki yedubar bo ubenesuav, meaning the pratim, bebechinoso kodem achet. Ki yedubar bo ubenesuav, bebechinoso acher achet. Two different worlds. Now you have to talk. You have to learn about both things. And he says, the commotion of our old bezos Hashem. I'll explain everything. Paragraph vav. In the other Marishan basis, when he was created, it was perfectly balanced the way I explained until now. He was made up, he was put together, components. These two opposite aspects. Shomarnu Shahim Hanashama Vahaguf. Uva Matsius, and as it manifests itself in this world, again, we're talking about the guf left to its own devices. We're not talking about yet if the neshama overpowers the guf. We're talking about the guf as guf is an animal. That's the who omeg b'shikul b'neihem. There's a tug of war. Lidovek b'mesha yirtzumehem. Again, like who's he? But he's in a tug of war to choose and to follow and to give the upper hand to whom he picks. There's a tug of war going on, and he's now going to lend his hand to the tug of war. You know how your royal lo sheyivcha b'tov, right? Hopefully the v'yagber nishmaso al gufo. V'sichlo al-chomro, v'zoya mishtale miyad. Again, what does miyad mean? Like, so then what would history have been? A minute? And it's not so clear. Yivcha betov, not eating from the Eitz Hadas. So they said till Shabbos. He was supposed to not eat it up until Shabbos. And some sources say after that he would have been able to eat it. We don't know. Akapana v'noch b'shle musel v'netzach. And that would have been the whole ball game. A one-inning ball game, right? He would have won, and that would have been the end of history. It's hard to imagine. Well, that's why Rabbi Avigdor Miller sounds so logical. Like, did Hashem make all of history for that first day? Like, maybe, we don't know. It's like a little silly to speculate. Zion. Yeah.
How would things have been different?
You mean with the ones that say he could have eaten it afterwards?
Yeah.
Eitz Hadas, he added an element to the person. It added a negative element, and it added something to overcome. Now, he wasn't supposed to eat from it because Hashem didn't want that. Hashem didn't want him to do it. But he did it, and now the way the Michta Melio, the Sefer Chaim, and others for him explained his cheshbon of eating it. But that it would have been okay to do it. I really can't go into it. It would have been okay to introduce that element of being acquainted with Ra, not seeing Ra as Sheker, but, you know, dealing with Ra as a reality also. He would have had the ability to do that once he had won the battle. Really, let's not go into these things. The Ramchal doesn't deal with it, and we're not going to deal with it. Not here. The Tzorach Shededa. And now he wants to explain that if you win the battle, the neshama purifies the guf. I told you this already. He's going to say it now. Shavati Sheinonu Margishim L'Neshuma B'Guf Pu'ula Acheres. We don't feel the neshama spiritualizing the guf. We don't. And it won't happen until after Tchias HaMeisim. Maybe it happens in a subtle potential form that we're not margish at all. Zulas Achias V'Haskala. We just experience the neshama as rational thought, as seichel. We don't see it affecting the guf, the animalistic guf. We're the same. We still have to eat. We still have to drink. We still have to do all the things that a guf has to do. In a be'emes, but the truth is that the neshama has a superpower that we don't feel. And the superpower is to spiritualize the guf. To make the guf spiritual. We don't understand how or why, but the malachim also have some element of physicality to them, but they're completely spiritual beings. So there is such a thing. And that's going to happen now at the Tchias HaMeisim. But he's saying that was there from the beginning. It will purify the guf, the chomro, and the guf's physicality. It will uplift it and make it spiritual and make it more able to connect to Hashem, the guf will be part of that ultimate lehisanagal Hashem. It's not just the neshama and the guf. We threw it into the garbage can, we threw it into the grave, and that's where it's going to stay. And goodbye and good riddance. It's almost not fair, because the guf did a lot of the work of mitzvahs. Why shouldn't it share in the reward? It's not a kasha that has no answer. I'm just saying that's the way some look at it. Rakoponim, the Ramchal and many, many other Rishonim say that the Guf will take part in the ultimate bonding with Hashem. And that's what he says here. Asher Rodot HaVzim HaBanor HaShleimot V'amlum V'davar Zeh HaYerodim HaRishon Magia Ilul Ochoto, right away in this world. Like, it would have transformed the Guf right here. No Misa, remember. No need for Misa. The Rishama can transform the Guf. Shehoisan Ishmosul Muzakeches is Gufo Zikuch Hakar Zikuch. Purity, after purity, purifying. Actually, Muzakech Hashir Homestarek. Till you hit whatever degree you have to be purified in order to be Masanek Al Hashem. The Nikla Batanuk HaNitzchi. But, paragraph Ches, the Chibin Shechoto Adam Arishon, Ishtanu Hadvaram Shinui Gadol. Everything went south. The person became more physical. The battle became an uneven tug of war, and the guf is so physical that it's going to stay physical, and it needs misa to simply decompose. I mean, that's a little simplistic, but right now, it's enough for right now, to decompose and lose its physicality. It withers away. A person has flaws, and that's the Yetzirah. He had his body left to its own devices, would want to do what it wants to do and not follow the Ratzon Hashem. It has desires, right? Chava said, the Torah says, Batero Isha, Ki Nechmoto Eitz Lamarim, Atavahula Einayim. It appealed. That was the goof talking. It looked nice. It seemed like it tasted nice, good. It was appealing. It had that koach to awaken her tivus, like you see something, you know, and then you start salivating. You start, oh, I want that. And she wanted it for good reasons, but again, we're not going into that. So, to whatever degree it was necessary, right? There had to be enough tug in the tug of war to have a tug of war. There had to be a hamshacha to ra, a hamshacha to physicality, in order to have this battle. So that he could win out, as Hashleimus be a gia kapov, the way we've been explaining everything until now. Omnom, but unfortunately, however, Agadei Cheto, through his chait, no suvenus rabul chasroinus ba'asma shal odem ubabriya kulo. Everything, as I said, turned south. Everything went south. It became more physical. It became an uneven tug of war. The ra has a much stronger pull on a person than Tov does. Ubabriya kula. Until then, the bria was right. Everything was an aid for a person to do avodas Hashem, and now the bria became enticement to ra as well. For od niskasha hatikun mimashoya kodem, and the tikun of the guf, meaning to fix up the guf so that the guf should share in the reward, now becomes much more difficult. Pirish, I'll explain myself. It was relatively easy. It was an even fight. The guf was ready to become more spiritual right then and there. So it was, so to speak, easy or easier to go out of the built-in flaws of the guf. Liknos hashleimus. To kach sidra hachachma helyonis advarim al pimidus hatova hayosher. And now he explains that primal state which existed before the chait. He says it's the goodness of Hashem, because a person wasn't bad. There was no inherent bad in a person. It was mamish even. And in fact, why wouldn't a person be like anything else in the bria that is only going to do Ratzon Hashem? It's like, why? So that Hashem implanted in a person this foreign idea, this foreign concept of going against the will of Hashem. So it's not inherent to a person. This is the way he's going to explain what happened after the chait. After the chait, it's I want to do this, and it becomes inherent in a person that he wants to violate. He has a desire, I should say. He has a desire to violate the will of Hashem that's pulling him. But otherwise, it was external. The desire to do bad was external, extrinsic, external to the person. It wasn't like, I want to do this. It was maybe like the original Yo, where he says, you know, like now we say, you know, I want to sleep some more. You know, one voice says, I want to sleep some more. I'm tired. I deserve more rest. I'm tired. I can't get up now. And the other voice says, you really should. You got to get up on time. You have things to do, responsibilities. So the I is me, and the you, that's what Michalio like very pithily explains after the chait. Before the chait, it was, I want to get up. Well, maybe you should sleep a little more. It was reversed. And that's what he's saying here. It wasn't like intrinsically bad, unless just by choosing sides in this tug of war, the Yifnalatov, Yasig Miyad, Seis Menachesor, and Kol Shleimus. So the body would be rectified and lose its physicality and be the spiritual being that it could be. You know.
So if it was really perfectly balanced, why did he make a choice between one and the other?
Why did he?
It was outside of him.
How was he Chote? I'm sorry. There's a long Michtav Eliyahu on it. If you want the explanation of the Michtav Eliyahu, you'll learn the Sifsei Chaim. You're too late now. We finished Noach already. Sorry. But this is what the best explanation. The Nefesh HaChaim talks about it. Reb Chaim Volozhin. He really was the first to set up this. The teretz that people are familiar with, the Nefesh HaChaim, from my understanding, Nefesh HaChaim was the first to say it. And then his idea was developed by others more and more, brought down to earth more and more. And Michtav Eliyahu, probably on Parshas Bereishis, I saw that someone just made an English sefer, Michtav Eliyahu on the Parsha. They excerpted, they took the Michtav Eliyahu and they took out the excerpts of whatever's on the Parsha and they made a Michtav Eliyahu on the Parsha in English. I saw it advertised in the newspaper. So, okay. It's not an art scroll book. So anyway, and then this, and the Sifsei Chaim of Chaim Friedlander like elaborates on the Michtav Eliyahu, and it's a study. Yeah, you can't. It's not a one line answer, but it's a topic. There had to be Bechira because that was the purpose of the world. So you can't, he describes the Bechira as perfectly balanced. So what's the question? How was he Chote? Well, he had a choice. So he chose the wrong way. He chose the wrong side.
He just liked flipping a coin.
No, who says flipping a coin? You have free will. You choose. Perfectly balanced.
Why would you choose one or the other? There's no reason for choosing.
Listen to her. If I would have been Adam Arishon, none of this would have happened. It wasn't even Adam Arishon, it was Chava. That I really don't understand. Chava was enticed by the Nochash. Well, what did she do to Adam? Like, how did she get Adam to go along with it? Adam wasn't even enticed by the Nochash. You see what power women have over their husbands. Really, really, really. It's not a joke. That's the prototype. They have this power over the husbands because they're part of the same neshama. And they really have a tremendous power over their husbands because he didn't even have this nachash. I mean, I'm sorry, really. There's so much to learn. I mean, you can sit and learn the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. If you ever learn Orach Chaim HaKadosh, now you can buy art scroll. Orach Chaim HaKadosh is in English. And you can read about the Chet of Adam Arishon and what the nachash said and what Chava said and what Adam thought. And he has his mahalach. What the Michtav Eliyahu is dealing with is, you know, according to Ramchal, you should have no kasha. There was Bechira before. It was perfectly balanced. So he was by Chibara, unfortunately. And that had tremendous ramifications. It's the others who imply that there was no real Bechira before. That everything was so spiritual and perfect. And Ra wasn't even a reality until he ate from the Eitz Hadas. So what the Michal of the Yom says, Chaim, really I'm dealing with is, and of Shechayim, and they're not even addressing your question. Your question was not a question. It was balanced, and he picked Ra. They're dealing with the implications in so many Sforim that the Ra wasn't a reality. It was like telling someone to stick your hand in a fire. It wasn't like, what should I do? The Ra was Sheker, false. It was perceived as such. It only became an enticing reality after the Chet. So they're dealing with, so then how was he Chote? How could he have? But in the Ramchal, you don't see any of that. Ramchal says it was perfectly balanced, and he made a bad choice. So your question really shouldn't be in the Ramchal. Why? But it did. It did, because it's not perfectly balanced anymore. Now you have a very uphill battle if you want to be spiritual. That's what we'll continue with that idea next year.